So in the midst of transferring to and from, I somehow brought my Bible but left my sermon in my pew over there. So I'm going to let my lovely bride bring that to me. Thank you, Alice. And as we get started, I want to simply say that this is a hard one. We've had two very tough commandments in our Ten Commandments series, the last two that we've dealt with. This one is equally tough. I would remind you, Susie Webb, I believe, has already taken our children out for their children's church time. Today is definitely a time, if you have children with you and you have not had what they call family life conversations with them, you probably want to get them and get them moving to another space. But that is your call, parents. We want to make sure you have that option and you have that opportunity, because there's no way to deal with Exodus 20:14. There's no way to deal with this commandment except in a PG-13 kind of manner. So be aware of that, and do know that this is what we're dealing with. And I know we've mentioned that the last couple of Sundays, but I want you to have that opportunity. Exodus 20:14. You can turn to it if you'd like, but I want to begin with a story. The story goes like this. Robert and Diane were a happily married couple. They'd been married for 49 years together. They'd been married happily. They had four children and seven grandchildren. Robert was a deacon in First Baptist Church of wherever they live. He'd been a deacon there for many years. He was a Sunday school teacher. He was well known in the community, and his wife worked in the nursery each week, and they were well known in the church and highly regarded. They were so highly regarded that them and a couple of others in the church were the folks that people turned to when there was a big struggle or a real issue to deal with. And what they oftentimes those were financial issues. And there was one time in particular where a young couple had gotten themselves into some significant struggle, into some significant issues. And Robert and a couple of other deacons were able to work with them and give them some hope. And then one of Robert's sons said to him, "Hey, Dad, you know that new business venture that we're starting? Wouldn't the wife in this group," her name was Rebecca, "wouldn't the wife, Rebecca, wouldn't she be a perfect PR person for our new venture?" And the father said, "Well, I hadn't really thought about it, but let's see your resume. I guess that might work." And before long, Rebecca had come on staff in this new business venture, and she was more than adequate. She was extraordinarily successful. She moved right up through the ladder of the organization, so much so that she was quickly one of the right-hand people for Robert, who was the head of the whole organization. About this time, right around 2015 into 2016, Diane began to notice Robert doing some things different. He was a man who never really cared about how he dressed, and all of a sudden he was wearing flashy blazers and fancy ties. He was a man who had never really sent many texts, but every now and then she was starting to get texts of red roses that came to her from him, which was not like him. He had stopped coming home for lunch as often. He had stopped holding her hand near as much. They had stopped spending as much time together. And on his calendar, which she saw regularly, there were significant blocks of time on many days of the weeks that were marked simply "hold." And when she would ask about him, he would get defensive and would just brush it off. Diane confided in one of her close friends that she was a little concerned, although she wasn't sure exactly what she was concerned about. And this friend of hers said, "Well, I've noticed that he's been spending a whole lot of time lately around Rebecca." Diane didn't want to believe anything, but she confronted Robert, and Robert denied things for a while, but before long, evidence mounted that something had been going on. Now, Robert would not admit to anything physical, but recordings and other evidence suggested otherwise. What we do know in this story is that because Robert was unwilling to distance himself from Rebecca, Diane filed for divorce in 2015. He experienced significant fallout with his children, so much so that he had a grandchild born in 2016 that, as of the time of the article I read about this, he had still not seen. In 2017, Rebecca was forced to resign her job. Later on in 2017, Robert was forced to resign his job. And actually, he was accused of misdemeanors because he was trying to cover up the affair that was going on. Neither he, Diane, their family, or Rebecca or her family were able to attend the church, the First Baptist Church that they'd been going to and that he had served as a deacon in for so many years. As a matter of fact, according to Robert's Wikipedia page, he had served as the chairman of deacons four separate times. By mid-2018, Robert had had to open up another office and open up another job, and although it's not listed on the website, he admitted later in an interview that he had hired Rebecca as his office manager in that new firm. Now, I apologize if you've already heard this story. After all, Robert, this four-time deacon chair and church leader, was the governor of Alabama from 2011 to 2017. Was forced to resign rather than be impeached. All because of the subject of this commandment that we are addressing this morning. All because of adultery. Exodus 20:14 says it very simply, very emphatically, and very clearly. Do not commit adultery. Now, this commandment has been tested severely in our culture. As a matter of fact, years ago, Ted Turner once famously said, you know what, if I was going to come up with the top 10 rules, top 10 commands people ought to have for living a good life, I'm pretty sure adultery wouldn't be one of them. And it seems like our culture has bought in to that conversation. The idea of marriage has been decreased in the whole of our culture. The idea that people should be able to do just whatever they want to do in the bedroom with whoever they want to do it with, and it shouldn't have any consequences whatsoever, has been put up as almost gospel truth in our culture. And yet God, in God's word, talks about us not committing adultery. And it's not just in this commandment. We look all the way through the Bible and this commandment comes up time and time and again. One of the ways where it's most emphatic is in the book of Proverbs. I invite you, if you would, to turn with me to Proverbs chapter 6. It'll be on the screen, or you can look on your phone or whatever mobile device you have. Proverbs just has a way of making these things clear. Proverbs, if you will, look at it with me. It's chapter 6, verse 27. The writer of Proverbs says, "Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes getting burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet getting scorched? So is he who sleeps with another man's wife. No one who touches her will go unpunished." And verse 32, "But a man or a woman who commits adultery lacks judgment. Whoever does so destroys himself." Now, friends, why does God care about this so much? Let me tell you why. It's not because God's waiting to hammer someone who committed adultery. We have the beautiful story in John 8 where the very woman who was caught in adultery, Jesus looks at her and says, "Where are those who accuse you and condemn you?" And she says, "Well, they're not around anymore." And he refuses to condemn her. He simply tells her to go and sin no more. So God's not looking to pound on adulterers as the worst sinners. What he's trying to tell us with this commandment is he's trying to protect us. He is telling us, you will wound your soul, you will hurt your life, you will damage and potentially even destroy your marriage if you go in this direction. Please, God pleads with us. The writer of Proverbs pleads with us. Please protect yourself from this temptation because it is a devastating one that will hurt you. If you play with the fire of adultery, you will get burned. So I want us just, in the time that we have, I want to talk about some ways we can protect ourselves and protect our marriages. And I want to talk about some ways, if you have stumbled, if you have found yourself in this situation, you've really goofed up, I want to talk about the way back, because there's healing, there's hope, and there's forgiveness. So let's talk about these things together. The first thing I want to say to us this morning, never think that it can't happen to you. Never think for a second that you are immune to the lures and the temptation of adultery. Because what we tend to think in the church, friends, is we tend to think that this is an out there problem. We tend to think this is a problem of other people. The people who are bad or the people who don't do the right things. Folks, that is a lie. This temptation belongs to every human being. And the minute you think that you are not temptable in this arena is the minute you make yourself vulnerable. Never think that it cannot happen to you. Adulterers are not just serial philanderers. They're not just, you know, midlife crisis men who have shirts down to the open to their chest with a big chain. It's not all the stuff that you imagine. It is anyone. What statistics tell us is that in our culture, 36% of men and women admit to having an affair with a coworker. 36%. 35% of people in American culture say they have cheated on their spouse while they were on a business trip. One other thing that we learned from our research is that 40% of emotional affairs that occur on social media turn into physical affairs. Folks, those numbers are huge. This can happen to anybody if you do not keep your guard up. I promise you, the people who participate in adulterous affairs, most of them say, "I don't understand how this happened. They didn't start out intending to do this. They didn't mean for this to happen." And yet, through a course of events and a course of choices, this is where they ended up. Don't think for a second that it can't happen to you. The minute you think you're immune is the minute your pride gets you in trouble. Second thing, do not give lust space in your mind and your heart. Do not allow lust to take up root in your mind and your heart. Jesus tells us this very clearly. Matthew 5:27-28, Jesus talks about, he says, "You've heard it said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you," this is the Sermon on the Mount, we talked about this 1 year ago, "I say to you, do not even," the minute you've looked at a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. How do you think Ted Turner would have reacted to that one? The minute you've looked at someone else with lust, you've committed adultery with that person in your heart. Friends, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but all of us there are a lot more culpable, I would think. Lust is a part of the human temptation. It's a part of human experience. It is something that runs after us. It is something that tempts us. And it is the very beginnings of the fires of adultery, which is why Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians, these words in 1 Corinthians 6:18-20. I want you to listen at how emphatic these words are. "Flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a man or a woman commits are outside of his body. But he who sins sexually sins against his own body. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought with a price. Therefore, honor God with your body." Flee from lust and sexual immorality. Flee, God says. He doesn't say, "Walk slowly while you're looking back going, wow." He says, "Run," because it's dangerous. You will hurt your marriage. You will wound the one you love more than anyone else. And if you're not married, you will wound what is coming for you one day when you get married. Friends, casual sex or even an intimate relationship with someone who is not your spouse is not all it promises on the surface. It promises allure and excitement. It gives you destruction. That's why God pleads with us. Do not commit adultery. Do not sleep and have sex with someone who is not your spouse. Thinking about fleeing from lust means that we have to mention two other topics. We have to mention emotional affairs. You know what an emotional affair is? It's that time you spend on social media talking with that person who really understands you, who really gets you, and talking to them about the things you can't talk to your spouse about. A lot of them end up being things that are wrong with your spouse. And many times you end up doing those, spending hours on that relationship, which, by the way, 40% of those end up in physical relationships as well. We've already mentioned that. You spend hours in that direction, and that is time, intimate conversation time, you were taking away from who? Your spouse. And people say, well, I didn't do anything physically wrong. That's not a problem. Yes, it is a problem. It's a problem because all of your most intimate thoughts, your most intimate conversations are being spent on someone who is not your intimate partner. It's a problem, friends, because sex is not simply a casual relationship. The way God designed it, the way He intended it, was to be built on the intimacy of relationship. And intimacy of relationship is built in conversation. It's built around meals together. It's built around doing the chores together. It's built in laughing together. It's built in having to push and pull and get through hard things together. Real sex in marriage is built on those things. And if you do not do those things together, you will harpoon and torpedo your sexual relationship in your marriage. And you will run the risk of spending that intimacy in someone else's corner. Emotional affairs are dangerous. If you have a spouse who's suggested that's something that's happening, listen to that person. If it hurts them, if it hurts him or it hurts her, guess what? It's not right. And it could be leading you into a place where you're about to get really burned. We have to mention pornography as well. Pornography is all over the internet. It's everywhere. And it's dangerous. It's a $10 billion a year industry. It is money that is used to produce pictures and videos, many of them using underage girls and girls who were victims of sex trafficking, so that men and women, by the way, 1 in 3 porn users are women, can experience sexual gratification without having to deal with the hassles of real intimacy. Pornography is a drug that is about selfish sexuality. It is all about you getting the opportunity to look at something that gives you a sense of sexual gratification without having to deal with the fact that it's actually another person. Folks have said it's the victimless crime. That's repulsive. It's repulsive. Because when you engage in porn, what you are doing is you are using a woman or a man to make you feel sexually aroused. And it's wrong. There's enough objectification of women going on in our culture as it is. We don't need more. You are using someone to try and meet needs that are designed for your spouse to meet. And it's all fueled by lust. But I'm not doing anything physically with anybody else, folks. That's a cop-out. Over time, porn makes you less likely to desire physical intimacy with your spouse, because guess what? Real intimacy is harder than fake connection. Real intimacy requires listening. Fake connection requires you to have eyes that see. You allow porn into your life, it will destroy your marriage. It will destroy your ability to be intimate with your spouse. It will dig a rift. You cannot scoop hot coals into your lap and get away with not being burned. Do not give lust room. Our teenagers go to a camp most years called Crossroads. And in that camp, Clayton King, one of the things he says, I've heard it when I was there in person. I've heard it when he speaks and you look at things through the live portal. He often quotes Job 31:1, which says, I have made a covenant with my eyes that I will not look at a woman lustfully. I have made a promise with my eyes that I am not going to look at another woman lustfully. Here's the point, guys, gals, friends. You've got to fight for your spouse. You've got to fight for your marriage. You've got to fight with everything you have to make certain that everything in your life is focused in honoring and loving her or him and not spending any of that other extra intimacy, any of that extra thought on anybody else. But wait a minute, Randy, if I see an attractive woman walk by, I'm going to look. It's what men do. You know what? I guess deep down I'm going to have to concede that men and women, when they see someone else that's attractive, we're going to go, huh, that person was attractive. Everything after that, friends, is all up to you. You may see someone walk by and say, wow, that person's attractive. Then you choose from that moment, right from then and there, whether you are going to allow that one thought to dominate your mind. Are you going to think about her the rest of the day? Are you going to think about what she looks like in a different situation? Are you going to begin to develop fantasies in your mind? Or are you going to say, wow, that person was attractive. Boom, I'm done with that, and I'm going to move on to something else. You have to guard your mind because you choose what you think about. You choose what you think about. You choose what you allow your mind to dwell upon. You have the authority in your mind to bring some thoughts in and usher other thoughts out. Only you. You have that authority in your own mind. Fight for your spouse and send those thoughts away. One writer has likened it to building your own pasture, your own corral. And you build a fence, a circular fence. Outside of that fence, all sorts of folks can travel. They can come into your world, they can speak into your world, whatever else. But inside that fence, there's only two people that go in that fence. It's you and your wife. You and your husband. Nobody else goes into that fence. There's a part of your life where no one else goes, and it's not just physical. You have to build the fence. You have to build the fence for your marriage. There are conversations you do not have with someone who is not your spouse, someone of the opposite sex. There are things that you do not do. There are boundaries that you have to make. And it's not just don't have sex with someone that's not your spouse. Don't have intimate conversations about what's wrong with your spouse with someone else of the opposite sex. That's one big boundary. Build the fence and protect your marriage. By the way, how do you build into your spouse? Every single husband and wife in this room, and for those of you that aren't married, I know some of this stuff applies to you when you're single. Some of it you can take down and save for when you are married. How do you build into your spouse? How do you let your spouse know that you love him or her? Write down this question. Write it down. What do I do that makes you know I love you? What do I do that makes you know I love you? I'll say it one more time. What do I do that makes you know I love you? Ask this question to your spouse today. Ask him or her, what do I do that makes you know I love you? And when she gives you some answers or he gives you some answers, for the love of all that is holy, do what they tell you. I mean it. If you're going to build into your marriage, do the things that make your spouse know they're loved. If one of the things your spouse says is, you know, it really makes me feel loved if you make the bed when we leave because I leave earlier than you do. Well, for heaven's sakes, make the bed. It's not going to kill you. You know, one of the things that really makes me feel loved is every Wednesday because I get home late from work. Dinner's already made. Well, by golly, make dinner. Order out. I don't care, but do something. Whatever makes her feel loved, whatever makes him feel loved, write them down if you have to. Write it down on your planner each day so you set a reminder, for goodness sakes, and do it. Build into your spouse. We spend so much energy building into our jobs and building into our kids and building into other things. We take our spouses for granted. Find out what makes them know they are loved and do it. Oh, by the way, here's another question. Write this one down. Honey, what do I do that makes you feel sad? Or maybe you want to ask it another way. What do I do that hurts you? What do I do that hurts you? What do I do that makes you sad? And when she tells you, don't defend yourself, just listen. Anybody want to know what I'm going to say next? For the love of all that's holy, stop doing those things. Just stop. Well, it really bothers me when you leave your socks on the floor. Well, if it's that big of a deal, pick your socks up. Don't argue with her about why it shouldn't be a big deal. Pick the darn socks up. You have to build into your marriage. Marriages do not run on autopilot. That's why you end up with affairs in the first place. People stop building into their marriage. Someone else at work, inadvertently most times, starts building in. And all of a sudden, someone has more love points in your wife's column than you do. And then we've got a problem. Fight for your marriage. Fight for it by loving your spouse. Ask her, ask him what makes them feel most loved and do it. Ask him, ask her what makes them feel most hurt and stop doing that. Build into your marriage. Every time you build into your marriage, you are protecting yourself from the coal that could get thrown in your lap. Now let's say one final thing. What happens if you failed? What happens if you're sitting in your marriage and you've really screwed up? You've had a physical affair. Maybe it was a one-time thing. Maybe it was something that lasted for a long time. Maybe you've had an emotional affair. Maybe you didn't mean to look at all those pictures, but all of a sudden, now you're looking at porn for a couple, 3 or 4 hours a day, and you can't stop. It's an addiction, and it's gotten a hold of you. And it's ruining your relationship with your wife or your husband. What do you do? Friends, what I want you, if you're in that boat today, or if you've been in that boat, hear me. God has not stopped loving you. God has not forgotten about you. God offers you forgiveness and offers you a fresh start. Now, I don't want to cover over this at all, because you know what? When you've had an affair and you've had a situation like this, the consequences in your marriage are painful. They are devastatingly painful. But there is hope for your marriage as well. It can be restored. It can be rebuilt. It can be renewed. God can do wonders with your marriage. So what do you do? What do you do? Well, first thing you do, if you've been in this situation, any one of the three I've mentioned, physical affair, emotional affair, porn addiction, any of those three things, first thing you need to do, you need to confess it all. You need to get it all on the table. No surprises. Just get it all out there. It will be painful. There will be heaving. There will be sobbing. There will be all sorts of things, but you've got to get it out there. You've got to come clean. Got to do it. Second thing, you've got to flee from what ensnared you. You've got to get away from it. If it was a coworker at the office, you've got to break it off and you've got to never talk to that person again. You may have to quit your job and get another one. You may have to move. That's pretty extreme. Folks, you're fighting for the life of your marriage. It's absolutely extreme. Cut it out. Cut it out. Whatever it is, get rid of it. If it's porn, I don't care if you have to get the computer out of your house. Get it done. Give your wife or your husband every single password you have so they can monitor everything on your phone, on your computer, on anything else. Do not hide a single thing so the trust can be rebuilt. Go to a counselor together. Let the counselor help you figure out if you need to go to separate sessions. The counselor specializes in that. We happen to partner with a fantastic counseling group here at First Baptist Newport News. We partner with the Peninsula Pastoral Counseling Center. They're online, PPCC. They're not very far away. If you ever need any kind of recommendation for any kind of counseling thing, all you have to do is come to a minister at our church and say, I'd like some help. Can I go over there? And all we have to do is call over and say, so-and-so's coming. They don't tell us if you ever came. They don't tell us how many times you came. They don't tell us if you're a client. That's all we have to do. We know nothing else about what's going on. That's your business. But get somebody who's a professional to help you put things back together again. Don't go to all the king's horses and all the king's men. You need a professional. You need a counselor. Give your spouse time to heal and forgive. Go to church together. Start doing things for your spouse that they love. Start spending time together as spouses again. Start talking together again. And by all means, I will say it one more time, do not talk to the other person at all, ever again. Why? That sounds cruel. No, it's not. It's cruel to your spouse to keep it going on. Just stop it. Your marriage is too precious to keep something hanging on. Now, I'm going to tell you, every marriage where adultery happens doesn't need to continue. If there's abuse involved, there's an addiction involved that won't stop, if there's a situation where the offending spouse says, you know what, I want to have my marriage, but I'm going to keep this thing going on the side. And you know what? It needs to stop. That's not appropriate. But if you're willing to come clean about it all, if you're willing to completely cut all that off and willing to start over, and you have a spouse that is willing to start over with you, friends, I've seen God do remarkable, unbelievable forgiveness stories and build some of the strongest marriages you've ever seen out of people that have come back from such a desperate place. It can happen in your marriage. Don't give up, because God has not given up on the two of you. There is hope here. Hope because of the power of Jesus Christ. So friends, run away. Run away from the lust. And if you have been in an adulterous situation, run away from the relationship. Run back to Jesus and back to your spouse. And let's get started on building it fresh. Because God's got amazing plans for you. Amazing plans for what's ahead. Oh, Lord Jesus.